So there's been a wee bit of delay getting this podcast out, and it's for one simple reason that you're about to hear, and that is a bit of distortion, particularly at the beginning, so don't let that put you off. It does get a wee bit better through the podcast. Unfortunately, there's distortion on particularly Remy, and a wee bit on Remy's, but particularly Eddie's mic for bits of it. I've tried everything to try and minimise that, and if anybody's better at these types of things than me, please let me know and I'll see what I can do. Anyway, if you can put up with that, that's fine. So, enough of me. This is me, Remy and Eddie Pearson discussing the Cup final victory.
The winner takes it all, the loser standing small, beside the victory, that's a destiny.
So, I am joined now by Remy and Eddie Pearson. Guys, I don't know if there's anything, bit of a slow news week this week. I don't know if anything's going on since the last time we podcasted. Anything you can think of to chat about?
Brian, see, just before we start, can I ask, will you be still doing the podcast when you're the new CEO at Ibrox?
I'll do both, because of course I could. I've got my real name, and I've got my Celtic Underground name, and nobody knows that the two are the same people.
That's it. You're the Kent of podcast.
Exactly. I just take glasses on and off, take my hat, my fedora hat off, and people go, "Wow, you look like that guy Harry Brady." So yes, I'm going to get the gig at Ibrox. I'll be there for 5 years and CEO for 5 seconds. But I'll make sure that because it's an obsession with how long people and things have been in situ at that place. So yeah,
you've got a tie. That's all I can say.
And I've
successful CEO in the world. is what you're going to go for.
You'll get a mural and a statue.
And I've got brown brogues.
That doesn't surprise me.
Brown brogues. I've got a double identity, split personality, and what more could you want for the CEO job?
I reckon you're fucked because you've got no business experience. That's going to kill you.
Well, I've got no experience of running a football club, so that puts me up there for it. So I've got a chance of doing that. And yes, I'll get the decorators in. So.
Harry Brady's got the painters in. Is it what? Welcome to our podcast, Patrick Harvey. That's what we're doing.
I was going to say it's a modern world. Anything's possible. All the Celtic dads that listen to this podcast are harumphing right now at the prospect. Anyway, right, so, first of all, Remy, there was a game on Saturday. Did you get to go?
I was there. I felt really lucky to our crickets because I've never seen a week last week with people looking for tickets and no tickets kicking about. And I know we both confidently predicted 4-0 or 4-1, but I think we did say a 1-0 would do, but oh, what a way to win it. I actually think I preferred that now because it's broken them. It was unbelievable. Just fantastic. The celebrations at the end were unbelievably good.
It's a bit like I always remember when Danny Baker used to do 606 and people used to phone in about stuff, and he used to say, nothing better than beating your closest rivals with a really dodgy goal that you subsequently found out should have been called off or offside because it makes the pain even worse for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we cheated them last week, obviously, but well-known Celtic supporter John Beaton and VAR. But I just thought for their hero and the guy they're selling for £21 million, Butland, to chuck it in the net was just fantastic.
Well, he obviously is going to get sold for £21 million because one of my guilty pleasures list to Heart and Hand, and I listened to that this morning. Apparently, they're selling Butland, and they're going to sign 3 quality players.
with the money they're getting from. So,
Rishi Sunak's one. Who's the other two?
With his Cruyff turn. So, Eddie, did you enjoy the game?
Well, you're talking about the difficulty of getting tickets. I had two tickets, and events meant that I ended up giving both of them away. Due to 2008's football teams somehow insisting on playing in the afternoon. And I didn't think anybody did want to play on the day, but there was a game taking place, and I had to have a debate with Pearson Jr. over what we did and whether we went to see the performance or whether he took his usual spot and his team and didn't let anybody down. And as a leadership lesson and as a maturity lesson, he went to the game and took part in his own game, so we went back to watch it in the house. So I don't know whether I made the call or not, but that was in the house. And I don't think it was as bad a game as everybody was saying. I don't think it was good. I don't think it was as bad a game as everyone was saying. It was just a typical slight against a wee team that are defending for dear life and going to try and break up the pitch for the final 10 minutes of the match to put us under pressure. Take a match. We've seen it so many times. We see it at Celtic Park every single week. What's it really different when we're playing Rangers now?
And in typical fashion of most times, I see the wee team then didn't do anything in the last 10 minutes.
Not exactly. They're playing for Commerce, which they'll play the team because a couple of times the ball was just shooting out across the front of your own goal, across the 6-yard box, and neither was playing it up. But the thing I thought was most significant, nobody's really talked about it, is that sense of ultimate disappointment that it's not it now. They're all not getting any competitive games in the Scottish League ever again. Does everything try and play this wee-guy style of football where they stick 10 men behind the ball for 85 minutes, they flinch it long whenever they can, and then the 35 minutes of the game, they're trying to keep it tight, keep it on each, and then try to put us under pressure for the last 5 minutes to try to sneak a goal. At least you wish to play a round of the way back in the game. You'd missed a game of football that could help you for Champions League practice or something. Is that it over? Are we going to be the only team to play something in this league for ever more now?
I always enjoy Hibs games at Celtic Park because I always think Hibs still think they're a decent team and always, no matter who their manager is, because that's why we usually score 4 or 5 against Hibs, because they come to Celtic Park and try and play football and we just play through them. But you're right. I mean, Remy, that was all Rangers tactic, wasn't it? It was just playing.
It was Derek McInnes tactics, and I think he maybe phoned Derek McInnes and asked him how to play against us. And, you know, I would imagine that McInnes might be in the running to be their manager in October, because I think Clement's in a sticky wicket now, particularly with a Champions League qualifier and then coming to Parkhead. If I'm them, I'm getting rid of him, but I think they're going to get somebody on McInnes. And Eddie's right, total wee guy football. It was like playing against Kilmarnock or St Johnson. They hoofed it. They committed nothing but a few dead balls. They didn't look like scoring. To be fair, neither did we, although we had a lot more of the ball. They were playing for penalties from about 60 minutes, or maybe they thought they would tire us out and beat us in extra time, but they were really, really poor. We probably had one of our worst performances for a long while, and they still couldn't beat us. And I think that's the thing that's hit home for them. We had a really bad day, and they could not beat us. And, they won't. I mean, you talk to any of them, they want the 8 of that team out the door. And, they want a whole new team in place for next season, and that looks like an impossible job with the lack of money they've got, and it's apart from the 20 million for Bond. But how are they going to build a new team in 6 weeks for a Champions League qualifier?
There was a rumour doing the rounds the other week that there's a break clause in Clement's contract in June. And it'll be interesting to see with the CML, the guy that's obviously put the current vision in place for the team, what actually is going to happen. Because, I mean, you were talking about October, and that does seem to be the traditional new manager time for Ibrox now. You know, just it's like Halloween, and then when the looking guy comes in, and the old terrible looking guy goes, but it might be it happens a wee bit later, because there seems to be talk that there's something in the contract which gives them an option to make a change at that point. I would assume they don't know it's short him just yet, but there was a couple of whispers about that last week. So that's interesting to see, particularly with the CEO going. But whatever's going to happen, they don't have enough money to fix it. And that's the thing that I don't know if everybody saw the absolutely fantastic article. Four lads had a dream that was up today. Well, the guy was sadly broken down exactly as this. I hate it when somebody's got a self-awareness. So it's much better on the total delusion. But he has a look at them and explained exactly what's going wrong and why it's going on. Even youth club shooters, which I thought, it's the first time I've seen anybody actually acknowledge him. That's what they had through the 90s and into the early 2000s. But the big difference is, this is the natural order of things. When users are only being pumped through on money that isn't theirs, or only treatment to get to where they want to be, this is the way things are going to be. You might get a red one every once in a while. You know, three things happen. With the COVID shot, having a kid go on, they go now. But I don't know, they're always going to be second to us. Even if they are the most successful club in the world, they're always going to be second. They're not going to be the most successful club in Glasgow. And that's going to be their biggest problem.
And that's one of the things I keep going on about is, particularly since the arrival of Jock Stein, they had a wee blip when they massively spent money, and that massive spending money morphed into spending taxpayers' money. In the grand scheme of Stein's arrival to now, they had a blip where they were ahead of us, and then that started to diminish down to just being able to compete with us. And it was the nearest, but they still didn't get there. It was the nearest to their understanding of, wait a minute, we are Espanol, because they used the Espanolification. Right. It was magic. They actually acknowledged the principle of Espanolification, that's where they are. Take out their blip of spending money they don't have, and that's them up. Espanolification's kicking in.
Isn't it marvellous? What are we?
In terms of the actual going, if you think of this, was it the first half? We were decent, we just wanted to get a breakthrough. I thought we were quite comfortable. I think overall we played decent football. The two fullbacks sat much deeper than that, and didn't come forward because they tried to stop us from getting any pressure. But it was all Celtic.
We didn't create a lot of chances. We certainly didn't create anything clear cut. We were definitely the better team in the first half. And the second half was more even because we weren't as good. And it's a lot easier to try and stop a team than to try and win a game. And that's all they did. But, you know, the subs they made, I mean, near the end, they had four wingers on. Mm-hmm. And we put on a big centre forward and a midfield with a bit of power and drive. And lo and behold, we ran through the midfield and the big midfield created the goal for the big centre forward. Perfect.
I thought our midfield was pretty poor. I thought in particular O'Reilly and Hitati were poor. I thought they looked a bit leggy and mm-hmm. a bit tired. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about you were just saying there, Remy, about midfielder running with the ball, I did also think that's the difference between Bernardo, and I'm not saying it makes him a fantastic player, I'm just saying that's what he offers different to the midfielders we've currently got. Hitati and O'Reilly would have run and passed.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have just kept running all the way. I mean, I know the Rangers midfield and just literally wasn't there. So he just knew nobody in front of him to keep going. But I still think O'Reilly or a Hitati would have passed that ball much earlier than they did, and he runs with it.
Yeah, I think one of the things I agree with you, I don't think our midfield had their best game on Saturday. I thought I agree with you, particularly O'Reilly and Hitati. But I don't, Eddie, how did the pitch look good in the tearing? Because I think that the grass is too long and too sticky for the way we try and play.
There was a wee spell where the players were slipping and sliding all over the place, you know, and it looked as if they just wanted to be able to find their feet a wee bit. Mm-hmm. But it's like they just turned the colour scheme up and it's like, it's a lot of screen. It's the sunshine came out. And the sunshine comes out of your head. And then on the sun, they've won this game. You know, so I wouldn't say it looked particularly bad, no.
No, But I think the grass is too long. It just doesn't suit the way we try and play. And that might have been one of the reasons why the midfield didn't perform. I mean, they were obviously getting kicked all over the place, which doesn't help. But, you know, I thought Carter Vickers was absolutely rock solid. And I thought Johnson had a brilliant game. I thought he played really, really well. Probably the best he'd played for a while. He actually looked like the guy in his first season. We did deserve to win despite them being the best player and best team and all those four trundlers on target and an XG of 0.38. I mean, we get humped, but we stole it. I mean, it's not like the League Cup we stole or Fraser Foster won us in 2019. It was nothing like that at all. We deserve to win.
I think
they lost it that one.
We're only 10 men.
Can I
game it?
They missed
the penalty.
Can I say that
game?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
And Mr. Smart have to make us 2-0, but we just sat around the ball area and defended everything. We just booted up the part later because we had 10 men.
It's a different kind of game. It's like they played us off the pitch. We didn't have 10 men on the pitch. I think that was that. The gap's closing. That's just dictated that. The game that we played on Saturday, that was about the gap closing. That's just about them playing bad defensive football and us falling into a routine that's happened far too often this season, and we need better players to try to break all of it. I love the break down a stuffy defence. I thought Hatate was poor, and I thought I really looked really tired, particularly as the game went on. There was 2 points towards the end where he played absolutely terrible passes after the other, and you could see him frustrated with himself. I think the practice team would plug in and he would jump to the other wing stand.
That was a shocker.
That was him just trying to lay him up, quite literally, almost 3 years a Rangers player. He just thought, right, I'm going to get a bunny here. Let's see you do that.
So I'll go through the couple of talking points in the game. Right, so first up, Remy, the Rangers goal that was disallowed. Talk me through it. Tell me your thoughts.
Right, well, at the game, I was on the bend, you know, the Celtic end joins the main stand.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably at one of the furthest away times in the stadium for seeing that goal. Well, all I saw was the ball hitting, missing the ball and the ball hitting the back of the net. But I saw right away Hart chasing the goalkeeper, chasing the referee. Obviously yellow carded him for complaining, but I could see him demonstrating the two-hand push in the back. I obviously knew it was going to be VAR'd because, you know, every goal's VAR'd. And when Hart was reacting, I was certain he'd been pushed. So I wasn't surprised to see it getting disallowed. When I saw the replay, there's no doubt it was a foul. And for all the huns bleating about, oh, Greg Taylor was holding Raskin, when the ball's out of play, it doesn't matter what he's doing. I mean, he could punch him and get sent off, but, you know, he was holding them. Players hold other players, they grapple with them, they push them about. Sometimes a ref will stop the game and say, if you do that when the ball's in the air, I'll give a penalty, which I think we ever do it. Although Chris Sutton got the penalty against Juventus way back in the day, a ref actually pointing to UV defender, say if you touch him and give him a penalty, and he did. But Taylor let him go before the ball was hit, so there's no foul. And Raskin, whatever, clearly pushed Hart in the back. Hart was getting the ball. Now, whether he'd have skiffed the punch or whatever, if he just got the top of his knuckles to it, it was going flying over Seymour. Blatant foul. They genuinely can have no complaint about it, especially given the VAR was beaten.
And so, Ed, you watching the telly, so I don't know. As Remy says, the thing that was clear as day at the game was how vociferous Joe Hart was at protesting that he'd been fouled, chasing the referee up the pitch. Really, I actually saw someone saying that they wondered whether it would have been checked so strongly if Hart hadn't been so vociferous. And the minute it starts to take a while to get checked, guy next to me, never met him before. The two of us are saying Hart must have been pushed quite badly by the way he's reacting. And the longer they take, the more likely it is that they're going to VAR it. And if they VAR it, if the referee's called over, this will get chopped off. Was it that clear on the television?
Not at all. No, because they're salivating over the fact that Rangers are flogged, you know, and so it's replay, it's replay, it's replay. And nobody's talking about the push at all. And then it cuts back and you see that outside his box and you thought, what is he complaining about? And it's only when they started to roll it back that then you actually start to see, that's a foul. That's a very obvious foul, you know. And to the extent that this is going to get chopped off, sure enough, I think a lot of that is going to be down to Bella Houston Park in 1982. To be honest, they were absolutely cock a hoop, as you can imagine.
Were you watching it on? I've just wondered who were the co commentators or the analysts? Was it Hunt? Was it the Premier Sportsman TV or was it the BBC?
BBC. You've got me asking now, wondering now.
That's BBC.
They're not doing the analysis in the game because surely to God. Anybody with a brain would have said, that's a foul.
I might say Kenny Marr.
Well.
That's my instinct, Brian. I think Kenny Marr, there's a lot of talk, Kenny Marr's going to join the coaching team soon.
Good.
Yeah. That might make the difference, Kenny Marr and I agree. That's be there with you. They're going to play Celtic football against us next season.
So at the game, the referee books Hart for protesting, for Hart saying, you shouldn't have given that goal, it's a foul. The referee gets then called over because somebody's saying to him, I think that's a foul. The referee goes, you're right, that's a foul. And at the game, I thought the referee had cancelled Hart's yellow card. But when I think back, he didn't do that thing that they do, the sort of hands crossed together. He went back to him, showed him the yellow card, pointed around. And I've looked at the official stats afterwards. And it appears that Hart still remains a yellow card, so I don't understand.
I agree, I thought he cancelled it, but I'll tell you something, I bet your Hart's delighted with that booking. If you're going to retire and you get the gold, you get the gold disallowed by complaining to the ref, you're right and you get booked and you still win. That's a wee badge of honour. You are pretty cancelled it.
So, next thing, Eddie, that because you're watching the telly, you send me through a message saying that's a penalty. And that's for Scales push. Now, this is where I'm now going to defend a linesman, right? Because I'm right in line with that. And because of the angle of the bodies, I hadn't a clue what you were talking about, because the only push I'd seen was, is it Sterling that he pushed? Sterling's two hands go on the back of Greg Taylor. Right.
Let me just check your watch, because I think I sent you that's a penalty for the handball.
Ah, right. Maybe it's just the timing of handing coming through. Because all I was going to say is, so it's only when I watched it back that I see Scales clearly pushes Sterling. Sterling. So the Sterling pushing Greg Taylor that I saw at the game is because Scales had pushed him. But because of the angle of the bodies, I don't see Scales pushing Sterling. I just see Sterling pushing Taylor. But subsequently, it was out of the box.
So VAR
doesn't give free kicks.
Yeah, can't VAR.
They're going on and on and on about this, and nobody's saying that VAR doesn't look at free kicks, and it was outside the box.
Yeah. The interesting thing, when you said that's a penalty, I was going to say, which one for Celtic? Because we should have had two.
It's not been talked
about. Kyogo get halved.
He's sort of vacuum. And that's why his head gets about for the back kick.
Yeah.
But he's a dog's team,
I would feel. Yeah, which is the thing. The only reason that Kyogo hits it for a back kick is because the Rangers player kicks Kyogo's leg.
Yep. Stonewall, as was the handball. I mean, the handball was one of the worst decisions you can ever see. And you've got Andy Bland making up stuff that hit his body first. It didn't. It was a blatant handball. Forrest is, and I'm not saying Forrest is going to score, but he's definitely got a goal scoring opportunity, and he's screaming for a penalty. Stonewall penalty. I could not believe that didn't get given in VAR.
And Davis thinks it should have been given as well.
You can see in his face.
Yep.
Well, you can see in his face. But nobody's talking about what we're going to talk about in the papers, and what we're going to talk about online is the fact that Rangers are coming and Claudio's tactics not on and Dominic 89 minutes of pressure.
That was quite a long rhetorical question.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I'm trying to be devil's advocate a wee bit here.
Still,
somebody
might need a support.
You can see. The boy in Four Lads had a Dream. It's him. He's the one that's no swallowed it.
He's the one. The head one, and it's him. He's the only one that's no buying it.
Get him on next time, Harry. Get him on.
But maybe it's in context. Maybe it's in the context of being really, really shite, that when they're only shite, that's actually quite good. Maybe it's all contextual.
It's a back goal that killed it for us. You know, it's you.
That actually, just as you're describing it, that is exactly like some of the goals. I remember, God, what game would it have been? It was a game at Celtic Park, I do remember. Like Julian Loudrup break up the Parton score after we genuinely had been, I think Stuart Slater had hit the bar three times or something like that, and you were leaving that game going, ah, just one lucky break up the park.
And it always had to be Mark McNally or Brian O'Neill. European superstars just leaded by them in the ball of their feet, and then you go, we're not that far away, are we? And that's what they have right now.
Peter Grant, you'll never do six in a row, you'll never do seven in a row, you'll shit the fuck up, Peter.
This game, I mean it.
So, was there any, before I get to our goal, was there any other, I mean, obviously, so there's those two penalties. So, again, if they're wanting, I love the way their sort of narrative around their chopped off goal was, well, he may have pushed them, but it was a penalty before. So, it's either a penalty or a goal to Rangers. No discussion of Davis handball, which, as we've just said, he himself thought it was a penalty. Kyogo Balogun going through the back of Kyogo, penalty. So, and then obviously they're wanting a penalty for Scales pushing outside the box. Is there anything else that happened in the game of note before we get to our goal?
The centre mid booted Maida twice towards the end of the game. It's so frustrating. And I think it kicked on the stomach and they did a bar check and thought, is that it?
Yes.
Someone's getting it. Why did he stay on the pitch?
Yeah, I thought there were a couple of shocking tackles in the game that on another day should have had that. I mean, I've not seen it in the telly, but I thought Seema had an absolute disgraceful he got yellowed for it, but he was pushing and shoving after it, and I thought, that's a red, but he got away with it. Now, whether it was, we're going to keep 11 men in the pitch, I don't know, but it was a bit, I mean, I got a bit feisty, and Walsh is, I'm really damn with faint praise. He's probably the best referee in Scotland, but I thought he had a really poor game. I thought he lost control of it in the second half.
Eddie, what was going on with Greg Taylor and Cantwell? Because Greg Taylor goes over and just pushes Cantwell in the face and gets booked for it. And then Callum McGregor goes over to him and pats him on the back.
I think it's because of the way he threw himself. Joe puts his hands on his shoulders as if to say, go on, Aidan, because that's what you want to do. And he just put on a lot of force. He's like, I need something to throw up. Wait, he's like, I'm just going to do it. He's never seen her do it. But he's just like, yo, see what show your voice at me. Back to my damn tail. It was that's like label. See, stuff like that we need. You know, so you can't look at us. And Cantwell took umbrage at the fact that Ben Preston, that's what you get booked for. They didn't show you what Cantwell did to go off the pitch when he was substituted, when he got yellow carded, because it looked like what the little bit they did show you is if Cantwell knew he was substituted and went after to her. And you booked at that point. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Well, you get booked just as he was getting subbed. I mean, he'd been told he was going off, and then he get booked because he's an idiot. He just tries to... He just tries to point to the horns. He's an idiot. He's not. He's a awful player, but he's easily mapped to a game. And the only game he's played well against us was the one that didn't matter when Inch hit the Borough Steam. I don't see it in him at all. They're never going to win in with him as their main player.
Because actually, the just for a brief second, as he did that, I couldn't remember whether he'd got booked along with Taylor. And I suddenly thought, is he just going to sum them up at the moment and be such a dick to get himself a second yellow in the middle of a substitution so they can't actually do the substitution? That would have been magic if he'd done that, but unfortunately he didn't.
Most shush burgers that night for him. I think you'll be regretting that when Raskin signs for Chelsea next week. But, you know, that's just...
So our new goal, and again, it's another goal that we score against them that's created by a through ball from them to us. We are right who they're now bringing on as a match winner that they couldn't sell for £500,000. Just can't, and he's a fresh player on, relatively fresh player on the pitch, just can't control a simple pass. And from that, we go up the pitch. So, Remy, do you want to talk us through the goal?
Yeah, really good quick pass from McGregor once Wright miscontrolled it. And as you said, their midfield had disappeared because it actually all pushed forward for a wee second. And, you know, their midfield was four wingers who aren't going to defend. Raskin's left in the mad bit. Tries to absolutely hack him. I'm quite happy that Walsh didn't go for a foul because he could have, but he played advantage. But Mando got his balance right. Mando was screaming for him to pass it as he advanced in the box. But the whole Hun hit line just stood on the 18 yard box and didn't close him down. He had to hit a shot. I mean, we all know Butland is weak at long range shots. Okay, the ball moved in the air a bit, but you know.
That's a 20 million keeper you're speaking about there, Remy.
Scott Dean would have saved that, right? So it was like, it was just, I mean, you look at, since Southgate came up to allegedly look at Bond, he's been dreadful. And Hearts, if he popped Hearts up, I wouldn't be surprised over Bond because Hearts had a great end of the season. Hearts saves that shot, no bother. He palms it straight out. He has timed his run perfectly. Which, you know, obviously the Huns have opened for an offside call. And he just sticks it away lovely and mayhem ensued. It was just beautiful.
And it was Tavernier that played on one side as well. That's an important
point to remember. He's post-match interview when it's on Rachel's TV. And how do you feel about that, James? And he's about to say disappointed. You see him thinking, going, I can't say disappointed. Devastated. He's like, well done, James. You've got a new one. He's a picture of him from behind the goal. He's arm up in the air looking
as if his mummy burst into tears. It's hilarious. I mean, he was never offside. He was about one side. He timed it perfect. Finished it really well. Didn't panic. And I think you know, even people in the south stand where Harry was sitting stood up and clapped.
That's not the closest
they get
to that.
He threw his flat up in the air and his flat and blank.
He's laughing.
3 cheers for the boys. That's what I shouted as I threw my hat in the air.
In terms of the goal, I thought the most significant thing is we actually just went had a pop. Like, had they done that the whole game? Yeah. Right, it was getting stretched because that was when they decided to step out in time, put them under pressure for the last 5-10 minutes of the game. And they sat so deep. So space was created. Two midfielders would have played in attacking positions. None of them had just turned and whacked it and decided to see what happened to it. And another just went around and just went, just like this. And you were sitting on it and hit it. And he was dead right to have gone to it. See, talk about the ball moving in the air. You really see it. Yeah, if I had a hand that you might be able to see it now, if the only turning shots I've seen so far, it's very impressive. Certainly now, it's not a hit to have to go and then Sanders like, that's a move as we back in the day. It
moves him at a foot. I mean, he split across it and it kind of sliced a bit. That was, you know, deliberately, but it moved up maybe a foot or two. But any competent keeper saving that.
I think it's glamorous when the keeper to talk about the movement in there. Because I thought, he throws himself and then suddenly realizes, Christ, this isn't even a pause going. And then he tries to get back with his hand. You know, and it was just, he just totally lost where the ball was in the air. You know, so yeah, maybe it did move, maybe I'm being too harsh on the,
You can't be, you can never be too harsh on that one. 21 million and now he's a dick. There you go.
They love this idea that we'll pick this guy up for nothing because nobody wants him. And a year later, we'll get 21 million points from him. Thank you. Third choice at Crystal Palace. Snake out of the England squad, and he's going to go to Newcastle or something. He might get to go somewhere in terms of, even it's been a ongoing plan. I feel like Liam Kelly being available and going to a team that's getting European football just because he's hungry and scoring. But I just can't see it. And I think he's firm, as you say. It's completely fallen apart. He's been talked up all of it. He's been talked up all of it. He's kicked him out a couple of times in the first half of the season. He's looking away for that. There was a couple of games in Europe. It's a tough thing.
He threw Edis in the net at Ibrox. I mean, that went straight through him. Straight through him. Terrible goalkeeping. And he probably should have saved the Tavernier Maeda 1-2. I mean, he was totally out of position for that. But let's dig out more mistakes for him. That's brilliant. Idiot that this is why Balligan's a new contract because he whacked the ball straight to the centre.
He's very good at putting the ball up in the back end, and that's what
they're going to
need next season.
Somebody
can do that. Do that a lot.
That's it. That one they've got. Do you know what, Isley?
Your
point there, see us, because at the game, and you're looking across, between me and Ida are all the Rangers players who are falling on their asses, heads in their hands. And I immediately thought, because you knew there was going to be a lot of injury time because of the VARs and the stuff like that. And you immediately thought, they're not coming back. Yeah. They are so devastated at losing. You could just see them. They are so devastated at losing this goal. It doesn't matter how much injury time, and obviously there was 10 minutes of it. They're not doing it. And the brilliant thing, we did what top European teams have done against us for ages. We scored a last-minute goal, 10 minutes were added on, and fuck all happened for 10 minutes. Nothing happened for 10 minutes. It was helped by Lundstrom doing two. Did he actually touch the ball, or did they just give us two free kicks that allowed us to waste 40 seconds of time?
I think he gave the ball away, and he tried to half O'Reilly as his last desperate act. And yeah. The reason it went to 10 was obviously the VAR check for Diamandi tackle. They'd lost the plot. They just decided, as you say, they weren't going to score, so they were just going to take a few bodies. And I loved it because we were kind of
You know that sometimes you play against a team that you know you're not a better than you. And you're hanging in the game and you're hanging in the game. But there's an inevitability that kind of later you're going to run out of luck. You make it float and you make one and once in a blue moon. The black team will eventually take control and will score and will win the game. And that's exactly what happened in the 89th minute. Even though it was 10 minutes to go, the reason why they didn't do was they knew that that's what should have happened. It's football guys that understand the game, so they thought, aye, we should get beat here because they're better than us. And that's why they're going to make it all out. Because in their hearts, there's not a single player in that team who really, really believed that they were going to beat Celtic. They didn't believe they were going to win the league. They didn't believe that. They had a wee start. He's up for a wee bit looking at him thinking, we're 6 points clear here, they've got a couple of games in the line. We might do something here. They never truly believed it because they never wanted to give it off. Then that's what that showed. We didn't go for him. That's what should have happened. That's right. This is where this game should go. And that's why they never gave us any more pressure.
I disagree because I think you'll find in that the game like that, the film book goes out the window.
Hello.
Is there a phone book? It is the shite.
The phone book goes out the window. Somebody will just leave it somewhere. I don't know. I'm going to string it. The phone book doesn't say no.
Can you not just put it back in the bookcase? I mean,
you're enjoying it in our front garden.
You see, the other thing that pisses me off when Celtic players do it is the thing about Tavernier running with his hand up in the air. Because one, if you're running about with your hand up in the air, you're not running as fast as you can be. Two, like, all of us on here have watched football for 50 years. Have you ever seen a linesman go, I wasn't going to give that? You see, since that guy's got his hand up in the air, I'm going to give that offside decision. I mean, it's just a...
I just need to disagree. We've all watched football for a long time, and I saw plenty of arms and more jerseys go up to claim something, and linesmen have went, I'll do it for me. Absolutely. That's what they're trained to do. Claim for everything. Claim for players. Yeah. And they'll get them. I totally disagree with you. That's exactly the tactic.
See, grass are for proof.
Yes, absolutely.
So, as I say, then nothing happens for 10 minutes. Cue celebrations. Actually, they were leaving. I don't know if the telly showed this. They were leaving. See, as soon as we scored, they started leaving.
That was amazing. I could not believe that. That section of the Honey End totally vacated when we scored. And then at the end of the game, all you've got left is the Smurfs at the front. And we were the only ones left for the wags, and because the Green Brigade had come on over the Huns, they delayed the presentation, which meant the Huns were up sitting about for ages.
And it did mean that the manager got a chance to speak to them in front of the team. Seems that the last manager got a chance to speak to them in front of the team. Remember this, boys. See this feeling. Remember the last feeling as well. Remember that one as well. See the one before that. Remember that. Don't ever let this happen again until the next time. And then maybe know that it'll happen again and then after that.
He says it because it's all right because I've thrown the phone book out the window for the next one.
Two things from body language that you saw at the end of the game. Number one was he hates Cantwell. He just can't stand the guy. It's clear as day. He's got an employee who works for him that he can't stand. And then the opposite side of things, the way that Brendan Rodgers was putting his arm round Cal McGregor and, you know, when they were interacting with each other, I thought it was the way that I you know, that I'll put my arm around my son. You know, it was quite an affectionate way. That it was an older man to younger son type affection type of way. I thought, there's like, he loves Callum McGregor. You couldn't get more opposites in terms of body language of a manager to a player, him to Cantwell and Brendan to Callum McGregor. But yeah.
I know that maybe being a bit harsh on the Rangers manager, because in the daily that the Rangers unveiled a tribute of Chris Tarrant surrendering at Ibrox, with his hands up as a hello joker as the Glasgow Rangers. It was not a card that was channeling Walter Smith in terms of just ragdolling players. I know Dundee United used to turn around happen games and eventually battle them, right? But sometimes it's just trying to be that third leg and inspiring them the way that Walter Smith used to. I think it's entirely possible that it was actually just a really touching tribute to what was the Rangers legend.
No.
Okay. What? I'll say that.
Jesus. So we didn't go. Lots of celebrations. Did you two have a good night?
I had a tremendous night. I think we were in the stadium that long after the game. But usually when you get that back to when they were on the road, the places even within buses, but they'd all long gone. There was nobody about. All the threats are the blue or the color called, I can't remember, the Union Bears. They were going to turn the pubs. No sign of them.
That's because they go to pubs at 9 o'clock in the morning so they can look really, really hard, but know that there's nobody around who can threaten them back.
Put them up, hide behind the pool's curtain. I was in Heracles for quite a long time. Brilliant. Seeing the goals on the TV and the celebrations. And I tell you, I really loved on Saturday after the game, You'll Never Walk Alone, I thought was absolutely unbelievable. Everybody singing it and the whole team and room staff all lined up facing the support. And that photo that somebody took from the Hun End is just amazing. It just looks absolutely fantastic. That's an iconic one.
I'll be in the club. I'll be in the club shop. You can get your exclusive print.
For I watched the interview with Greg Taylor when he was talking to Jim Lewis, and he's got to be dead polite. And he went, "Can I go and join that? Can I join that? Go." And that was a nice moment as well. This is the moment that I want to be part of it with my teammates. I want to be with the team. I want to be with the support. I'm having to be proud of him. It's only if I'm going to join it.
It's a good name for his last game.
Oh, you're harsh. I saved my scales and Taylor criticisms.
The game's done. The two of them cannot be starters next year.
I've seen something at left back, and Taylor will retain his place over him because they don't come in and they won't come and Taylor will be back in.
Don't ruin it for us.
All I can say, if that happens, whoever's scouting for left backs at Celtic is shite. I'm gonna go to down to Kapow, whatever it's called, and tell him. So, talking to players and stuff like that, two people involved in that goal are on loan. Do you keep one, both, or neither? Do you sign one, both, or neither? Eddie, I'll ask you first. Bernardo and Ida. Well, that's just okay. It might well be that you're saying, well, I'd buy him for X, but I wouldn't buy him for Y.
I think the way the manager talks, I think he would sign Ida, and I think the Ida thing feels a bit like Fraser Foster being on land. And then waiting to the end of the transfer window and then coming back again. I could see a wee bit of that going on. It seems like there's a bit of dance going on around that guy. It was clear that we know it's not getting promotion. Then they're going to have to a couple of guys. The talk of Tony McLean going to Ajax and stuff, you know, there's going to be a clue there. So the potential is there, but we're only going to wait till the end of the season, the close season, before he appears.
And Bernardo?
Yeah, but I'm sure that Ronaldo, I think that perhaps if we're going to lose O'Reilly, which you could assume we will, I think they might also lose Hatate, but maybe his form's not been strong enough for it to be the same level of interest in. It would make sense to have a continuity in the midfield rather than bringing in two completely new players. And it might be Ronaldo, the team is coming to step up as a 13th player. Portuguese under 21 captain. That he's got to have something. He's a decent wee spell in at Christmas and then faded again. He's not going to get in ahead of midfield three regularly. Is it just the asking on the door around the table that makes you think that the player's great? It depends on the process. I've not seen enough of him to say we have to sign him, but none of us said he's a donkey and I don't want him.
Really?
Right, well, we can easily afford the prices for both of them. And if the manager wants them both, then we should be signing them. That's a factual view of what should happen. Personally, I would sign Bernardo. I think he's got a phenomenal upside because he's only 22. He is going to get better. He's settling in here. He gives us a bit of toughness in the midfield that we lack. He's also pretty tall. He's had some good substitute appearances towards the end of the season. And I agree he's not getting in the first three, but I feel he's going and we do need some continuity. We've obviously got McGregor allegedly might be getting an operation after the Euros. So I signed him. Now, on Iba, I thought before he signed he was a diddy, right? Every time I'd ever seen him, I thought he was rotten. I think he's had a fantastic loan spell. I think he's been really, really successful. But I wouldn't buy him.
Even though, I mean, if you think about it, so he scores the winner in the cup final, scores a third goal at Ibrox, scores at Fir Park, scores at Hibs. It's been big game goals. Rugby Park, it's been big game goals that he's scored.
Well, I just, Jackie Mack has scored a lot of goals and he wasn't a very good player. I just think he's got a lot of weaknesses. Now, I would say Rodgers has improved them and he can probably improve them further. And my whole thing is, if Rodgers wants him, we should buy him. But I want us to... I mean, that was my opinion. I heard Kyogo might be off. So, now, if Kyogo's off and we're punting O, then we should buy either, right? But I worry about him for the Champions League, and I know we only, we've got to worry about domestic football, but I want us to do something in Europe, and I don't see us doing anything with Ida as a centre forward.
I think he's a better player than Jackie Marcus. You were talking about Jackie Marcus there. I think he's more involved in the game. I think he brings more players into the game. Jackie Marcus scored goals, but I felt as if when Jackie Marcus came on, that there was opportunities because the games are getting stretched all the time, and he's done a bit as well. But when I look at things like the game against Kilmarnock, but he's there for the start, I think there's more there than I thought there would be originally.
I don't disagree. I thought that was his best game for us. I mean, I know he turned the game at Motherwell, but I thought Kilmarnock, he led the line brilliantly and he totally blew McInnes' tactics by playing him up front and killing the press by giving us a longer ball option. And he held the ball really well. He's had some really good games. He's had some really bad games. As an impact sub, he's done brilliantly. as I say, if Rodgers wants him, sign him. But, you know, I don't think he's that great a player.
Would you want a player like that? Do you think we need a player like that? You know, either coming up and then starting to
Yes, we do. I mean, I would prefer, if we could all buy one of them, I'd buy Mayovsky. But, you know, he's not good for us, but I think he's a better player.
The thing I thought is interesting, just you saying about rumours about Kyogo being off, there's a clip Sky put up on Twitter. There's a couple of clips they put up. They're doing an interview with Brendan and Callum McGregor for some programme on Friday night. And one of them, Brendan says something about there's going to be changes this summer. There's a number of players who've been here for 3 years. If you look at the profile of Celtic in the last few seasons, or the 3 years seems to be the optimum amount of time for people to be here before they decide they want to move on. And I thought, well, who's been here for 3 years? The 3 years are Joe Hart, which we know about, but the other 3 years are Hitati, Maeda, Kyogo. Those are the 3 year players at the club.
Carter Vickers.
So I wonder if actually there's, I mean, we know that Hart's gone. I mean, we fully expect that O'Reilly's going to go. So I just wonder whether he's also expecting that there will be another two or three out of Carter Vickers, Hitati, Kyogo, Maeda. Can't tell you that.
I would not be selling Carter Vickers if we could avoid it.
No. I think Carter Vickers is probably too wee to play in a team that he deserves to play at in England. You know, and so... I think he probably could get a... He could easily go to a Wolves or something like that. But, you know, maybe it's like, I don't know, that's more attractive than playing it Celtic Park again. But I just think that he's not going to play like top five, because those clubs aren't going to look at him and see what we see, because he's no tall enough for them. So it'd be better staying where he is. He's still in Scotland. And I think he's the biggest attacking player. But I would say he's the best player in Scotland. And the thing about that would be that because he'd be able to compete at a level, but he deserves better than what he would get by playing for a Wolves or playing for a Bournemouth or you know, a Brentford or something like that. You know, I suppose that's the thing people normally say, no disrespect to him. Fuck them. The reality situation is you can play for a club of his size and stature. And that's the thing. And say that this is the best place for him. I hope it's the best for him to play in years yet, because he's so vital to what we try and do. He won't be able to play in the season. It's not that anything like the reason we're struggling was because we didn't have him playing to his full capacity. And when he started to find his feet, then we started to recover. And the same thing happened towards the end of Ange's time. When he was injured at the end of last season, that's when we fought.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important to the way we play, because it's so calm at the back when he's here. He's always going to win the ball.
That's right. His first name is Cam. So that's that. He's just no nominative determinism.
That's awful.
We're going to try and charge people for this. Seriously.
So, I think you're right. I think he's too small and too slow. I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean for what the type of players that are the better clubs in the Premiership. They're looking for a centre-half who's 6'3", 6'4", and is fast. But equally, I think he might be in the same place that O'Reilly's at, which is,
doesn't want to leave Celtic to go and play for some mid-table team. What's the point in leaving 60,000 people every week in Champions League football to go and play where the best thing that might happen is you finish 10th? I don't think he's in that, and I think that's where O'Reilly is, which is where, I mean, the thing that's disappointing me for O'Reilly is we know that O'Reilly's going to go, and he's not going to Denmark squad. So from a very, very basic principle, that's probably cost us about 4 or 5 million quid, him not being there. Because if he'd been in the Denmark squad and played in the Euros for Denmark, got any game time in Euros for Denmark, instead of going for 20, he goes for 25.
I don't know about you guys, but I know the quality in Denmark when I'm back in my hands. You know, I know the players that are good, the players that are bad, and I cannot believe John Reilly is not in that squad. He's the best player in that Denmark squad by a mile.
Christian Eriksen in that Denmark squad. Christian Eriksen is totally done. Right? He should be ahead of him. But if you look at the Denmark squad, it's a bit like the Scotland squad. He's picked the guy he's been picked for the last 5 years.
By the way, I am impressed you've been tracking the Denmark squad for the last.
I was about to make some joke about a guy, about people called Fjordensen and Henriksen and Laversen.
I've got a Panini sticker, so it's Stano.
That's what people should answer. I
love the Danish football. That's what I love. Fuck your XG and your scouting reports. I've got Panini stickers.
So, if O'Reilly's going, and I also thought it was the way he said it, Brendan seems very calm about his thoughts that he's going to be getting decent players this summer. Do you think we will?
Hopefully. Well, the guy must have finished his dinner if he's back scouting again.
We'd record this at 9:45 at night. He'd have indigestion if he's eating at this time of night, and then that's not going to do his for your players any good.
He's just in at 5. So when he doesn't
get to just like. I think to go back to your question, I really hope we get better players. I hope we get our recruitment right. I hope we get players that excite us, and I hope we get players who are better than the ones they're replacing.
The big thing that cost us any sense of relaxing in this season was the fact that as soon as we're first going, there wasn't the quality of some to fill those positions.
Yep.
Dama wasn't good enough. Tarnold clearly wasn't good enough. Team doesn't look good enough. You know, the skills play at left hand, the skills have played above feasibility level. So all of this time of this season, it's honestly here to get up to his basic level. They're not good enough to play week in, week out for Celtic. We can maybe come in and do a turn now and again, and that's the problem with the second tier of players, and that's the problem with the Mark Morgan transfer window. He brought in so much mediocrity, and we're trying to plan to bring these guys in, they're just morally good enough, and that's what gave Rangers the glimpse that something could happen this season, but when we got the first 11 back, which is motored, and we need more players of that calibre and better than that to make it really possible next season.
And something you said right about 5 hours ago at the beginning of the podcast, Eddie, about I genuinely did over the course of the weekend think to myself, right, we really should be beating them now. They maybe get 1 out of 6 trophies. We really should now be saying, right, and it's not to take domestic success for granted, and it's not to take beating Rangers for granted. As we talked about earlier, we're of an age and a generation, you know, and Andrew Smith wrote a piece on the site, on the Substack, put up earlier today about people, a fellow journalist saying to him, do you ever get bored of winning? And the answer is no, I never get bored of winning domestically.
Absolutely not. You can't get bored of the last few weeks. Absolutely brilliant.
However, there is a part of me says, right, okay, we have proved, even when we fuck it up in the transfer window last summer, we have still proved, because we've got such a brilliant manager, that we are better than them. So surely the next thing is we've got to do something in the new Champions League. We've got to find a way of trying to hold our own. Not going to win it,
but hold our own.
Well, we've already got European football after Christmas, which is one of the ones where we always get this stick that always beats us. And it's great for me because we're actually, there's a Champions League game scheduled or potentially scheduled for my birthday in January. What a night that'll be for me. It's just like, no, Champions League in January. Yeehaw. This year it was Bucky Thistle. So there's the difference. I agree, we need to do something in Europe.
Well, a double celebration for you because you've got your own tea prices for the season ticket as well.
Not quite, sadly not. But
it won't cost you anything to get to the games.
That's true. That's true. I could get a bus pass now. We need to do something in Europe as well as maintaining domestic superiority. I agree with you.
We've said that so many times. What about doing something in Europe? Do you think that we can actually get in the top 24 in that group?
That's what we should be aiming for. Why not?
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with the aspiration. I'm just asking, do you see it being done? Then we should be able to compete, selling in the top four in the top three teams.
Yeah.
And maybe lift our game against one of the top two or top one teams. I mean, that's really ambitious, and that could easily come back to bite me. So, many more great things to think of that's what's going to happen. But, you know, there's a possibility there. We can put up our games and see where they're at. My big concern is that I'm looking at the terrible conference thing that took place there. And it was a rotten game of football. There's a European trophy that we're just never going to get a chance at competing for because we're always going to be running out of views. And I don't mean this, well, for us, we're not so bad that we're going to take part in that. But I would have still liked the fact that there were drop downs.
Yeah.
And a lower level competition for a team like ours. Because we're not going to get in the last eight. We're not going to get in that tournament. But we're always going to win in that tournament becomes an always for us a games we have to play. And all it does is create a negative vibe around about the club and in the winter months. Because we're winning domestically and we're beating the Motherwells and we're beating the Camalics and we go midweek and we just a team and we have to manage a rubbish of England, what was a rubbish, and it's only when we get into Europe and we get into say February, March and April that we actually start to enjoy football again because we'll leave all that behind us. Because that's a pattern of the last 4 or 5 years, even more than that. But we start off quite optimistically in August. Domestically everything goes fine, but we think everything's rubbish because we're not competing in Europe. But then we get Europe out the road and we think, thank God that's finished, and then we start to enjoy the football again, and then we win the league. I'd have to see that becoming a cycle, and perhaps when a support we perhaps need to gather against that.
But what about in a, you know, I'll use your devil's advocate phrase, automatic Champions League qualification goes after next season, right? We might be in the Europa League. We might be if we're not good enough to qualify. We need to get through qualifiers again. So we might get the Europa League. I'm not saying we're going to win it, but you know, there's no reason why we should not be able to go reasonably deep into the Europa League with the squad we should have. There's no reason why not. Yeah, there's no fun getting scalped in the Champions League every year. But the three home games this year, we played really well. We were unlucky against Lazio. I mean, it was actually Carter Vickers that sold it that night. Brilliant performance against Atletico Madrid and beat the Pot 1 team. You know, you could be lucky and get an iffy Pot 1 team. Mm-hmm. We beat a Pot 1 team. We beat a Pot 1 team in the Champions League and we beat a Europa League Pot 1 team 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
So, there
it is. I don't think anybody's going to go into a qualifier and want us not to get into the Champions
absolutely.
League.
You want to qualify.
But there's a logic in perhaps finding a level for now in the Europa League. And then you look at your West Ham's, you look at the celebrations in Greece, a European trophy. That's going to be yours. You're just in that nether region of good but no good enough.
Has Glasgow City Council complained about the celebrations?
Have you seen the mess? You see, those big marbles are lying all over the place. It's shocking. Although, did we have a conversation after that? Did you have a conversation? Or did we sound like Daft Old Men? Did you know when you celebrating? Did you have your top off, Remy? Were you in a fidget? Were you halfway up the trolley?
No, I wasn't. I never would be. That's no for me. But, you know, I'll be interested to see the Scottish media reaction when the Tartan Army are doing it three times in Germany.
And maybe if teams were allowed to do things like open-top bus tours around the city and get civic receptions out at the city chambers, as happens across cities across Europe, maybe it wouldn't need to happen. Maybe if they prepared for it.
I understand why they don't create something at Glasgow Green. Like, it was a couple of games to go before it all became clear what was going to happen. But at Glasgow Green, there's a big area there, right next to the ground. If there's a need for it, right in the center, quite close to that ground, surely there should be a sort of template where they could just introduce, we're going to have a couple of stages, we're going to have food available, and folk can then go there and have a celebration. Surely that'd be good for the economy. I don't think that the funding thing is necessarily the best way to do this. I think it becomes a wee bit performative after a while. That seems to be my word of the week. in terms of, you know, folk feel obliged to go and do it. And the initial thing about it was great, but as younger kids are coming and just getting bloated and it's a way to stay. Whereas if you keep folk occupied, it feels a wee bit like some of the stuff you see in the papers.
You're suggesting organised activities for teenagers in the Conservative opposing national service.
That's what you said. You said give young people a focus.
Yes, said,
that's exactly what you said. You said you need to give young people a focus. Don't let them, because see if you just leave them, they'll go and smash the town up in flares. Give them a focus.
Give them a focus. But I get to, I mean, I
mean, your friends.
You've suggested
there are the three of us. I'm the expert when it comes to this stuff, right? So my advice would be, start buying sage and 6 months national service that make a man of you and keep you running.
Well, it's a modern world.
I think you'll find out that when your face printer idea kills any celebrations at Bella Houston.
Maybe I would love the gesture if you get that face paint on that and see that big white wall that when you're going to have to live up all that stuff out there about one for a successful club. But if I like face paint on a big, something on it, it's not even really good because otherwise that's just going to be a big blank magnolia screen. It's going to look rubbish.
I can't wait to see that tunnel next week.
Yeah, they could put a lion's face on it and they could call it Lisbon. That would go down well.
I wonder that though. See how we've got all that 55 league titles, however many league clubs, how many Scottish clubs, 1972 European Cup, Winners' Cup, is what they've got. Don't you think, when?
So, your solution to next season's title is there'll be no kids there celebrating because they'll all be on national service.
That's it.
They'll be playing in Palestine.
Eddie Pearson's been around.
Yes.
Eddie Pearson's Fenian Army will all be marching out to do their national service and put something back in society, give the young people a focus. So that's what we're going to do. But getting back to the Champions League... They're all looking up the Danish squad so they can compete with Remy. Now he's...
More or less the same team. If you look at it, you'll recognise all the names.
They're also googling what to do with form books.
Even one of them's even come back from the dead, and he's still ahead of Ireland.
So that's it. We are champions, double winners. Brendan Rodgers has won all bar one trophies that he's competed for in Scottish football. We're going to have a fantastic. Obviously, we will lose the. I mean, we're already behind in the pre-season cup because there's all these players that are getting talked about there. So we just have to resign our fact.
So did Norwich by the looks of things, because they presented them for one of them, didn't they? We no longer have any interest in the guy. Aye, because he told you no.
So any specific memory you're going to have from the cup final in this double winning season, Eddie, obviously making your son have to watch it on the telly instead of going, any other?
Even standout memory of the season.
Yeah, so...
Joe Hart's final game for Celtic, I think, is worthy of comment. I think it's fair to say there wasn't a Celtic fan 4 years ago for Joe Hart to come and play for the club. I think that we had a perception of Joe Hart which has been shown to be absolutely incorrect. There was something about, I don't know, maybe as a younger man he was more arrogant or what it was, but Nedy was particularly fond of him. He's nice for Celtic, and he's not a legend. You know, there's a tale of a Celtic legend, a Celtic great, a great soul, a good servant, all the way down. I think he's been a great Celtic player rather than a Celtic great. I don't think he'll change a lot for years to come. There's no other than the fact that 3 years that he's been in the club, he's been absolutely brilliant for Celtic. And it was great that he finished his career on such a high. I think it's hard to avoid something emotional for him. And it doesn't look as if it's not affected him. So I was delighted to see that he finished with two trophies for his time at the club. And I think I would have to disagree with him. He's been very, very grateful for the impact he's had in the club.
So you were wearing full kit with the gloves, Remy, last week. So you don't need to cover Joe Hart. You stand out from the season. What's your standout memory from the season?
I think overall, if you cover the whole season, it's been Matt O'Reilly's form. I think he's scored some great goals. His three assists in the Champions League were just some fantastic passes. But the game that sticks out the most for me is the Hearts game, where we thrashed them 3-0. But the support and the atmosphere was phenomenal, and the whole stadium believed we were going to win the league again. And I think that's the performance that kicked us on to do it. I think Motherwell was probably the turning point, but the Hearts game at Parkhead, that was the best atmosphere we've had at a so-called non-big game for a long, long time. It was brilliant.
With the sense of unity in that game, everything just connected. The manager was in charge, the team were playing well, the fans were on side, everyone was working. Seriously, what kicked us on? Another Matt Lowell, that was a significant turning point in the season. And I'm not saying that it wasn't kept the ball at all. But do you think that the psychology of the club changed at that point? It was as if the lawyer was only in charge anymore.
Yeah, there might be a truth in that one. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was certainly really happy when I heard he was off. And I'm sure there was many people. I bet you Brendan Rodgers was happier. But aye, that probably did. But I think the Motherwell game was the turning point where he turned into the old Brendan Rodgers. He was ruthless. You know, he'd on at half time. You know, we'd been seeing the 60-minute subs like for like. He went for it that day because we were losing, and he'd have turned the game. But the Hearts game was the Kilmarnock game was brilliant. But the Hearts game for me was, as you say, the unity was there, and I think everybody believed we were going to win the league and probably the cup.
And I got the impression around that time that the part of the support that was just spent the first two-thirds of the season whinging just decided, look, I know we didn't have a great summer, and I know this and I know that, but more importantly, I want Celtic to win the league, so I'm just going to get behind the team and stop whinging.
Yeah, that might be true.
Well, it's more important being right or Celtic winning, and for the vast majority of us, we have decided it was Celtic winning, and I think it paid off for us.
And you're right, and I think, as you have mentioned before, Eddie, Billy Big Balls Brendan returned, and I think it's no coincidence that when the fans got behind it, Mark Lawwell left, Billy Big Balls Brendan returns, the fans then get behind the team then plays better. What did we win, 9 games in a row or something at the end, including the cup final, something like that?
Yeah, I think it was that, yeah.
That
was eight straight after the Huns game, but we'd won, we drew there, which put the league totally in our hands, despite them saying it was totally in their hands, it was also totally in our hands. You know, we had the 8 cup finals. Okay, some of them, like St Mirren, no longer became a cup final because we'd made that a moot point, but we won all those games. And that is how you win trophies. You win big, you win games when it comes to the crunch and it really matters. And our performance levels did go up because we had some of our better players back fit and firing.
And we also refused to take any tap of that Jane Lewis stuff, the girl stuff, do you know? Yeah. And you know, it just says, I'm still not going to be this exactly as you know. I think he tried to be. He's up in the season. He's up there. He was coming back. You know, just a feeling he's really weak, but I think he was gone. And I think he just, at that point, a couple of things, he just thought, nah, I'm not having this. I'm doing the Raiders. I'm not a lead manager. I'm just going to do what I think I should do. And it worked. It absolutely worked.
It did. And with that, I will say, Eddie and Remy, thanks very much.
Cheers, Harry. Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision. And also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.